Welcome to the Teach and Tell podcast. I'm your host, Mike Raymer, Executive Director of the Georgia Council on Economic Education, an organization whose mission is to help teachers teach economics and personal finance. Come along as we spend time with some great teachers to learn more about what it's really like in the classroom. Today's guest is Craig Ellis. Craig, tell us a little bit more about yourself and your teaching career. Like, where are you teaching now? How long have you been teaching? And what are you teaching these days?
So I currently teach at Oconee County High School. This is my third stop in my teaching career, which has spanned 18 years. I started off about a decade in Oglethorpe County and then did about 7 years in Jackson County. And now I'm here in Oconee County. Currently, at the moment, I'm teaching AP Macro. Just finished some regular econ first semester. And that's kind of the main stuff that I do. I do a little bit of government when I have to or when they need me to.
Yes.
What was the rest of your question? I'm sorry.
No, we're good. That's good. So for those folks who don't know geography so well, where is Oconee County?
Oconee County sits right next door to, I think, one of the greatest college towns in the world, Athens, Georgia.
Athens, Georgia. And you're a proud Bulldog yourself, right?
I am. Okay. Go Dawgs.
Yes, there you go. And I've had the pleasure of seeing you teach, seeing you operate. I've been in your classroom, I think, a couple times. Craig is one of our former Economics Teachers of the Year and an outstanding teacher. So, Craig, I want to start by asking you, what do you think is the most rewarding part of being a teacher?
For me, I think there's two main things that make it really rewarding. One is just the relationships you get to build with students. And especially for me teaching economics, I feel like I get to build an even deeper relationship because we can tie in, like, you know, so much about their personal life, like work and their plans financially and stuff like that. So the relationship with students is a lot of fun as we're doing activities and things. You get to get part of their personality you might not get otherwise. And then the other part is when we're learning a hard concept, I enjoy seeing students where they kind of struggle and all of a sudden they finally get the concept they've worked really hard to get, and that light goes off and you can see how much it means to them that they finally learned it. And it makes me feel like I've accomplished something, even if I haven't. I mean, it was just them. It makes me
that
feel
was you.
Good.
It's definitely partly you. 100%. Yeah. So I guess it's not hall duty. Like, that's not the most rewarding part of being a teacher.
It's not, but I do enjoy at least interacting with the kids out there.
Nice. And Craig, you also coach, right?
I do coach. I help coach girls basketball. Did that earlier in my career. Took about a 10-year hiatus, and I'm back doing it again.
Okay. And I think folks who aren't teachers maybe don't realize how many teachers actually coach as well. Can you get just a little bit of an idea of how much time that takes up of your life, like during the season? When does the season start? When's the season end? How long does it take to coach?
Well, I mean, I think that does vary per sport a little bit, but I'll say for basketball, we started in, I guess, like late middle October, October 20 something. And we just finished here at the end of February. We, you know, that's pretty much every afternoon after school. We're playing most, especially once January hits, every Tuesday and Friday night, occasionally on Saturdays. I would say it's probably a good at least 2 or 3 hours after school, maybe at least 2.5 hours after school every day.
Some long bus trips too.
Yeah, bus trips, and I actually drive the bus as well, so that's one extra thing in there. And you know, but it is, I will say, it does take a lot of time, but it is you do get to build some relationships you don't get to build with students in the classroom. That was probably the one thing I missed. The one thing I missed about coaching when I wasn't doing it was those extra relationships you get to build with students. Mm-hmm. But it does take some time.
Yeah, definitely, because it is a unique experience. Like, you can connect with kids in the classroom, but connecting them coaching is totally different. And then when you coach a kid and then they end up in your class, I always found it interesting that they're different. Like, they're just sort of on the field, they're one, and in the classroom, it's a different kind of atmosphere, which is kind of cool.
You're right. That is.
Yeah. Craig, what do you, if you could pick one or two or maybe three, what do you think are some of the greatest challenges of being a teacher in the year 2024?
I think one of the biggest challenges, I think, is actually one of the biggest opportunities as well. It kind of goes two ways. And I think that's technology. I know it's very broad, but technology in the sense that the challenge that we're having to compete with students' interests, I think it's no secret that students are very attracted to technology, and some of them maybe even slightly addicted to technology. So we're having to fight that battle, and the I guess that entertainment value that technology brings, that sometimes it doesn't seem like that in the classroom. So I think that's one challenge. Technology also in the sense that, like, I feel like it's kind of created this microwave society where everybody wants things and, 30 seconds, hit start, it's there. And I think, students want to know their grade automatically, and they want to know this automatically and this. And I think maybe that gets away from just wanting to learn the content and enjoy the subject matter, which is what I enjoy. And so having to fight that battle. And just, I think, just overall, we feel like we've got to have it and we've got to be connected to it, and just, getting kids away from that. You mentioned hall duty earlier. One of my biggest pet peeves, probably in general, is like, I'll go, hey, say to a kid in the hallway, and they just ignore me because they've got the earbuds in.
There you go.
Just trying to get that away so we can create more of that relationship and personal aspect with students. I think that's one of the biggest challenges. And also just staying ahead with technology as a teacher, of ways to use it to make it the classroom engaging, not just, not just for novelty effect, but really make it engaging and, trying to keep that balance and stuff. So I think that's probably one of the biggest, and that's a very broad topic, but probably one of the biggest challenges.
Do you, is your school having like an any kid can bring their device to class whenever, or are they supposed to have them?
So all our students have their own school issued Chromebook. So
Okay.
at least they don't have that, but phones, I mean, everybody can have their phone, and
Yeah.
we have, policies and about where to put it and all that, but still you got to, stay on top of them about making sure they're putting their phone away and, stuff like that. But I'd say that's a little bit of a challenge just in general.
Yeah. I remember when it might have been my last year of teaching in 2008 when phones really started getting bigger. Our standard policy was if you see a phone, you have to take it. It's just like, this is nuts. And the parent got called and the parent had to come pick it up. Like
Yeah,
this isn't gonna last.
it's an interesting battle or
Yeah.
interesting challenge, I should say.
Yeah. If you could
No,
make
and
it.
we're no different. We struggle. I mean, I know as an adult, I struggle with, getting too attentive to my electronic devices too sometimes. So
Yeah, there's cool stuff on phones, right?
there it is.
Yeah, no doubt. If you could make a change to profession, to teaching profession, what would you change if you could change anything?
It's a tough question. I don't know if this is really an issue or not, but I know for me, when I started off as a teacher, I probably was not a very good teacher, but I did have some very, I think, patient administration who helped me learn and grow. And I would just hope, and I think that is the case, or at least where I've worked, that administration is patient with teachers and helps them, find a way to become better at their craft, because it is a tough job,
Yeah.
as far as the amount of decisions you have to make, the you're having to be on so much during the day as far as, educating students and engaging with them. And that's part of the enjoyment of the job, but it also can take a lot out of you. So just to help support teachers to make them want to stay in the profession. Because if you're willing to stay in, it is a rewarding profession, but it can be really challenging. Sometimes you can feel like you're on an island. And so I think
Sure.
that's just maybe overall support.
Yeah, how many students do you have in a typical day?
So we're on a block schedule. So on a typical day, I probably have the three periods, maybe 70. But I have taught on a 7 period day before. Those days, I mean, there were plenty of days I had 150-ish, if not more, students. So I have that kind of good, because I don't have a block schedule. I know it's a lot worse for some people.
Yeah, and in block means you, the classes are 90 minutes long or approximately that time, right?
Yep, 90 minutes.
Yeah. So, I mean, imagine, for, again, for those who aren't teachers, dealing with 150 unique individuals who are teenagers, bringing all things teenagers bring to school every day, like just dealing with that.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. The things they bring. I know when I first started teaching, I occasionally I would say, like, wait till you're in the real world. And then it very quickly I realized that there were so many of my students who had things that were much more real in their lives than I had in my life. So I quickly quit saying that. It actually kind of annoys me when people say that about students, because they do. There's some students who have a lot of things on their plate as far as, having to help support their family, or
Yeah.
maybe their parents aren't stable, or maybe they're having to help with, go to work, and all sorts of things that we don't always think about.
Yeah.
And that can be challenging, because you're right, that's a bunch of different people, and you're trying to figure out, all right, what's this person's challenge today? What's this person? And that can be overwhelming
Yeah,
sometimes.
it's
But
just
it's
endless.
also a good challenge, and, part of the rewarding part to some extent.
Yeah. I remember had a student that just really horrible things were going on at home, and I'm up there teaching like comparative advantage or something. I'm like, just, if this kid doesn't get this today, it's not the end of the world. And I think I needed to change my perspective and think more like that, because it's like there's bigger things going on in this kid's lives than this, right? And I think there's some teachers who aren't flexible ever, so that they can never get off the fact that this is the most important thing. We got to learn it right now. It's like, well, maybe not today.
Yeah,
That's
I agree with that. I think sometimes they just need to. I think even if they don't want to study, if you can be exciting and enthusiastic about it, and they can see that there's somebody happy that they're there in the class with. I think sometimes even if they don't learn it, that's sometimes what they need, maybe.
And this is a safe, welcoming place to go that they enjoy being for 90 minutes. Can you think of a single favorite teaching memory? You've been doing this for quite a while, so I'm sure you've got many, many, many great memories. But if you could just pick one, what is it?
I got one. Matter of fact, it comes back to me every single year. So, for those of you who teach economics, when we learn about supply and demand, some of you might have done the market for crude oil or the market for whatever it is you want to call it, where students are, some of them are buyers of crude oil and some of them are sellers of crude oil, and they're, negotiating prices and you're learning about supply and demand through that. Well, I was teaching this to an AP class one time and we're doing the activity and the, fire alarm goes off. It was not expected. Like I didn't, nobody knew it was going
No heads
off.
up.
Yeah, no heads up. I think somebody pulled it. I'm not sure, but like at the moment we didn't know. So we're doing it. And like, so we literally go out of the parking lot and we just keep doing it. And
Nice.
we keep doing the activity. And like, these are seniors. All these like freshmen are kind of staring at them like, what they doing? It was great. Like, it was like this inner economic nerd moment where like just we're totally engaged in the activity and people around us are kind of staring like, what are they doing? That was probably one of my favorite memories. And I think about every year when I do that activity.
That's nice. And a little known secret about fire drills is teachers know like ahead of time if they're coming, right?
They do.
So when there is one where you're like, oh crap, that I this might be real. It's always a
That
little
is true. So once we
yes.
got outside quickly, I realized it was not, and we just kept rolling. So yeah.
Fire drills, there's nothing can disrupt your class more than a fire drill. It's just like, oh God.
Yeah.
Just when they come back in, you've lost them for the rest of the period. It's
Yeah,
amazing.
it's always key never to plan a test on a fire drill day or
Yes.
make sure that never happens. So yeah.
And fire drills, when it's really hot out, when you come back in and your room smells because the kids start sweating. I don't miss that.
Yeah.
You might have already mentioned this as your previous answer, but if last day of your career, you're going to teach one final lesson. Is it going to be a market lesson?
From an economic teaching perspective, there's so many things that I would love to teach, but I think one of the, this might sound almost too simple, but I think something about maybe human capital. And the reason I say that is I know for me personally, I grew up in a small town and but when I started teaching, I just did things that would improve my human capital as an economics teacher. And that provided so many opportunities to me, provided opportunities to my students and enriched my life. So I think I would maybe do something about human capital and help students understand the effect that is. But as a good economics teacher, I'd have to have some kind of activity. So I don't know if I tie it into like the making pizza activity or there's an activity where we make cups or something where we could see that and maybe broaden it out from there to standard of living and all these other things, maybe supply and demand of wages. So I could tie all that into one thing. But I think human capital, just because no matter what your profession is, if you can find a way to increase your human capital, it can pay so many big dividends for you. I think that would be something around there, I think, would maybe where.
Great. That's a great answer. And I think you probably would agree that that's one of the greatest parts about teaching econ versus some other subject is it's so relatable and you can do things like that and show kids like, hey, I am still like you, Craig Ellis. You're still increasing your human capital, right?
Absolutely. That's actually why I say that, because I work with people. Well, I shouldn't say I work with people here. Sorry, the lights just went off in my classroom because they're on a timer.
It's all right. We're back.
Sorry about
No
that.
problem.
But yeah, I know for me, I'm always looking for ways to learn more and improve my craft, whether it's technology or more economic stuff. And I think that's one of the things that makes a lot of fun because I can always learn stuff and find ways to make it more engaging for my students. And not everybody uses it that way. Some people just get stagnant and they kind of get stuck with what they're doing.
Yeah, roll out the same test every year for 20 years.
Yeah.
I once, there was a teacher in my department that he was a coach, so I had to go cover his class one sixth period. And he's like, oh, I'm giving a test today. And he left, and I looked at the test, and it was an actual test that he had mimeographed. It must have been in
Wow.
the 80s. I'm just like, what is this? And the kids were just like, yeah. I mean, I was like, man, this is rough. Yeah, that's a bold move. Kind of along the lines, a little bit about human capital. Imagine that if a brand new teacher or a college student who's going to be a teacher is listening to this podcast, and they want to pick up tips about teaching. Are there any resources out there that you think would be helpful, or strategies that you think would be helpful to a younger teacher or an existing teacher who just needs to sort of regroup and come up with some new strategies?
I think a couple of things come to mind. I think one, you got to be willing to get out of your comfort zone. Sometimes just asking people. I had a college professor always said that ask, ASK, mean actively seeking knowledge, but willing to go out and just ask other teachers, can I come watch what goes on in your room? Not that students talking about class is always the best indicator of a class, but if you listen to students, like you can get an idea who really good teachers are in the building, and you can maybe go out to that teacher and see what they do. They're good about that class. I know when I first started teaching, I had a degree in history. I never student taught. I just went right into teaching.
Oh.
And one of the people that I learned a lot about from classroom management was my, not my wife yet, but my wife now. At the time we were dating, she was an elementary school teacher, and I learned so much this little strategy stuff from an elementary school teacher that I incorporated. So just like asking people. I think nowadays, back then there was no, social media, Twitter, stuff like that, but you can go find stuff online. I think that's the key. Just, go around and ask people. If you're lucky enough, like being an economics teacher, if you can find some group that does stuff focused to your subject area, I think that's a great way to go.
Yeah.
That doesn't exist for everybody, unfortunately. Myself recently, I've done some stuff with it's called Edgelastic. I think it just got bought out by Pear Deck, but it's like a testing thing where you can create your test on there. It's a little tedious, but it can work to fight, cheating and stuff like that if you're given a multiple choice test. So I think you just got to be willing to learn and just figure out what works best for you and try something out. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work.
Yeah, that's one of the
There's
cool
no.
things of teaching. Like you could do something in first period and it bombs, and well, I gotta fix this before second period, right?
Yeah, I think that's key. I think I've always tried to figure out, all right, I'm going to try this and it works great. If it doesn't, oh well, let's move on to the next thing. I mean, you got to be willing to experiment and hopefully you have people in your building that are willing to support you in that endeavor.
And I love the idea of going in and observing other teachers. I remember going into math because I can't in my head. I can't figure out how math teachers teach math. Like I just can't do it. So I would go watch the really good math teachers, and it was like, dang, man, they're good. And you're gonna steal something from them, no matter who the teacher is. And you mentioned how students are usually a pretty good indicator of who the good teachers are. But of course, then there's the one teacher who lets kids run wild and do anything they want and eat brownies all day. You gotta avoid those teachers. Like you don't wanna go in there.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just yeah. Anyway, so all right. Final question, Craig. Someday in the future, before you're all said and done, someone's going to make a movie about you as a teacher and your spectacular teaching career over the years. Who's going to play Craig Ellis when Hollywood comes calling to make a movie about you?
I'm gonna go with two options.
All right.
I'm gonna go with either maybe Matthew McConaughey.
Nice. I listened to a podcast this morning with him on it.
Really?
What a coincidence. It was a soccer podcast. He was on that. All right. He'd be an amazing teacher.
He would do it. I like some of the movies in. And the other one would be like maybe the late 90s to mid 2000 version of Tom Hanks, maybe. I'm a big Forrest Gump fan and some of the other Tom Hanks movies, so I think that would be kind of cool.
All right.
It's funny you asked this question. When I was in college, when I was working on my master's, I was taking a class. It was like the history of teachers and teaching, and I actually did a research paper on the portrayal of teachers in movies. And I watched about, I don't know, 20 or 25 movies with teachers in them, and talked about how they were portrayed and stuff like that. It's funny you asked that question, actually.
Funny, so many
It's an
times in
easy paper to
movies.
write. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, so many in so many movies, teachers are kind of just made to be fools. I mean, they're just sort of there because the movies are generally about the kids, not the teachers. But Conaughey, I could see that. That's good stuff, man. All right, Craig. I'm going to let you go because you have to go back and teach pretty soon. The bell's going to ring any minute now. I appreciate you being on the podcast, and more importantly, I appreciate the fact that you're an amazing teacher, teaching thousands and thousands of kids throughout Georgia to be better economists and better thinkers and better financial planners. So we wish you luck the rest of the year, and we will see you at a workshop down the road at some point.
Thank you, Mike, and thank you for everything that the Georgia Council does to help everybody that's an economics teacher in Georgia be a good teacher for students.
All right, it's our pleasure. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Teach and Tell podcast. Help us spread the word and promote great teachers by giving us a 5-star rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Until next time, I'm Mike Raymer, and I'm here to remind you that econ is life.